This is Brock.
And this is John.
So what is due diligence?
Well, if you're a young lawyer, it's what's going to occupy most of your life, a young deal lawyer, for the first couple of years that you're in a transaction. It's essentially an investigation of the business and operations, financial condition, and affairs of one party to a business transaction by the other party. It serves both business and legal functions, but the biggest business objective is to essentially enable the buyer to confirm the economic assumptions that drove it to think about buying this company in the first place, and the pricing analysis that it's done for the acquisition. Now, if you have a stock deal, the seller is likely going to be conducting its own reverse due diligence, targeting many of the same kinds of issues, and that will look more like the buyer's due diligence the bigger the deal it is. I mean, if you are a small company that's getting stock from a Fortune 500 company, your shareholders are going to be able to offload that very, very quickly, then perhaps you're not going to be doing as deep a dive, nor you'll be permitted to do as deep a dive as if you were getting 20 or 30% of a target stock and, you know, you're going to be holding that for a while. So both parties can do due diligence. But there's also more to it than just narrowly focused on the business and legal issues of the transaction. It also helps to lay the groundwork for integrating the operations of the company post-closing. Smart companies early on in the process will start thinking about post-closing integration, and that's a big part of what due diligence is all about as well. It also helps lay the groundwork for drafting the agreement, identifying potential stumbling blocks to getting the deal done, such as consents that are required or unfavorable contractual arrangements that need to be addressed in some fashion. If you're rendering legal opinions to people, this is also a very important part of that process of verifying what needs to be verified in order to enable the law firm to give a legal opinion. So there's a lot of work to be done, and it's important for a broad number of areas in the transaction.
And how much time will lawyers, and I guess it's mostly lawyers doing due diligence, right? Bankers hire lawyers to do the due diligence for them.
Well, I think it really is. It's more of a process for the whole deal team. Because remember, there's a lot of this is business oriented due diligence as well. There's the document review might be 90% lawyers, but it matters what those documents say, and there are management interviews that will be done. People need to understand the business. Again, it's all about confirming assumptions about valuation, et cetera. So there's a big role for business people, bankers to play in it, accountants, lawyers, it's for everybody. As to how much time do you have, it depends. I've been involved in acquisitions, for example, investment banks. When the big banks were gobbling up investment banks in the 1990s, the assets of those targets would get up and go home every day, and so due diligence, they didn't want to let the cat out of the bag, and these deals tended to have very truncated time schedules. I remember doing one where we had a deal room in a local hotel, and the buyer was shuffling people in and out of that hotel to look at documents, et cetera. And because they were concerned about leaks, the whole due diligence process and negotiation of the deal it happened in a week. And really, the heavy lifting and talking to the most senior people and getting their commitments to stay with the company post closing, that happened after close of business on Friday, and the deal was signed up Monday morning before the opening business. I remember that particular week, my wife almost killed me because I got a phone call at 2:00 Saturday morning telling me that there were some disclosure schedules that they needed me to review that were coming over to my house. So that was a lot of fun. But anyway, you may have a short period of time. In auctions, you may have a couple of rounds of due diligence. The first may be intended to give you enough basic data to put together a bid. Additional due diligence, if you make the cut, will be provided for you. In other settings, you may have several weeks to complete your due diligence. You may even be able to negotiate an exclusivity arrangement, typically in private company deals, that would allow you to do this with some degree of confidence that your deal is not going to be interfered with. And again, while you're doing due diligence, that's not the only thing you're focusing on. You're lining up your financing. You're typically negotiating your purchase agreement and other documentation. So these are all going down parallel paths. And a lot of it, just how much diligence you have depends on the overall timing of the deal itself.
And I guess this probably relates to the first question I asked about what due diligence is, but why even bother with it since you might not have a whole lot of time?
Sure. Well, I mean, we talked a little bit about the business reasons why you really need to do it, but there are also legal reasons, and they're pretty significant. For example, if your deal involves a public offering, you may need a diligence investigation both to satisfy yourself that you're making appropriate disclosures in your offering documents, and also to establish a defense to Section 11 liability under the Securities Act for your directors and the folks that are signing the registration statement. Other regulators also expect to see thorough due diligence. For example, the DOJ has very detailed expectations when it comes to FCPA and other corruption due diligence in M&A transactions. If you have regulatory issues with your target post-closing, the level of diligence that you've conducted is going to be something that gets looked at closely by the regulators. A lot of buyers make the mistaken assumption that, this all happened before a watch, so we're not going to get clobbered. Well, you may get clobbered still by a regulator, but you may get clobbered less if you can come to that regulator and say, hey, you know, we did thorough due diligence, and this was concealed from us, or for whatever good reasons we couldn't find it. They may be inclined to hammer you less than they might otherwise do so. In addition, to the extent that you have a justifiable reliance component to any kind of a breach of contract or fraud claim, which you do in some states, due diligence will help you establish that as well. Finally, you know, the biggest thing is your recourse after a deal is going to be limited, okay? In a public deal, you're not going to have any. You're not going to be able to go back to the sellers and complain about breaches of reps and warranties or things not being the way that you thought they would expected them to be. In a private deal, your indemnity rights are limited. Maybe you've got 10% or 20% of the purchase price at risk for most things under an indemnity provision, and it may be very difficult to pursue those rights depending on the nature of the transaction beyond the amounts held in escrow. So you need to do your homework in order to protect yourself as well. So there are lots of reasons to do due diligence.
So how can someone learn how to be good at conducting diligence?
You know, it's all about preparing, and it's all about preparing and coordinating with everybody on the deal team. If you're on the buyer side, prepare a tailored due diligence list, understand the industry that you are dealing with, take the time to understand the deal before you start doing your due diligence so you can avoid tunnel vision, read the information memorandum, the financial statements, any public filings if it's a public company, visit the website, look at the marketing materials, do your due diligence before you do your due diligence. If you're sitting in on management presentations, and boy, you really should, I always try, when I'm doing a deal, I try and get the young folks who are going to be in the deal room to at least sit in on the management presentations or portion of them, so they have some idea of what the areas of focus are. Pay attention to those presentations. Listen to what's said. Listen to the responses. It's basically prepare before you jump into the document room. And this is all going to serve you pretty well when you're sifting through a data room. The other thing, and I really stress this for the younger lawyers, is this document review and due diligence, it serves another function for you, and you really don't realize it while you're doing it, but this is, you're being trained, and you're being trained not just to do due diligence and look at contracts, but it helps you understand how contracts and other corporate documents look and how they work. And there really is a mechanical process that most of these contracts for certain things tend to look like other contracts. They tend to have similar provisions, or they're structured in similar ways, and it's really a valuable experience. I remember once I was doing a deal where our client was looking to buy a company that had made over 100 acquisitions in the past 5 years, just an incredible volume of deals, and they'd run into financial trouble. The client was very interested in understanding exactly what the obligations were on those transactions, any ancillary agreements they had, because it was going to look to divest many of them. So I spent a ton of time wading through all of these deal Bibles for these acquisitions. It took a lot of time. But I think I may have learned more about deal documentation in that due diligence process than I did in any other project that I was given as a young associate. I saw all kinds of agreements, asset deals, stock deals, mergers, foreign companies, had to spend time understanding how they worked in order to summarize them. It was a miserable process, but I learned an awful lot. And I think for a lot of young lawyers, as they they do this kind of stuff. It's miserable. It's tedious. It's drudgery. But there are lessons that you're learning that are of real value, and it's a real building block for going to the next steps of your career.
And in addition to being drudgery, I mean, there is the whole feeling like a needle, at least for me, when I was doing it, you're looking for a needle in a haystack.
Yeah, you're looking for bowling alleys, right? That's the old Barquist case, right? You got to make sure that the bowling alleys are there.
So how do you know if you found anything worth mentioning? You might spot something, let's say you're reading the minutes, and you know, you're new, you don't want to ask the senior partner a question every 5 minutes. Well, plus they're likely not going to be in the room with you doing diligence. You're going to have to write your list of questions down and then
That's
later
right.
ask, you know, so how do you know what's even worth asking about?
Well, I think, first of all, this is one of those things where I would say there is a bias towards saying something. I mean, you know, if you have a question about whether something might be important, flag it and ask somebody up the food chain. You know, if you're a young lawyer doing due diligence in a document review situation, chances are if it's a big deal, there'll be others with you, and chances are if it's a big deal, there may be a more senior associate in the room with you who has a better understanding of the issues and that type of thing, and you can ask her, you can ask him, you found this, is this something that needs to get elevated? That, I think, in that context, and maybe we'll have another one of these at some point talking about how to ask questions without getting your head chopped off, but I think when you're doing due diligence, there is an understanding with younger lawyers that they are going to have questions like that, and you don't want them to be intimidated to bring them to your attention. So I think that you're really encouraged to do that. But it helps you, again, if you've done the preparation beforehand, even if you're relatively young, you know what the deal's about, you know evaluation concerns are. If you've got a draft of the purchase agreement, if you're fortunate enough to be doing it where there's a purchase agreement floating around, it should be in your hands when you're doing the due diligence. Look at the reps. You know, have you found something in there that needs to be addressed in a disclosure schedule? Is there a consent requirement that's going to be triggered? Is litigation referenced in audit letters that you hadn't heard of before? Is there something that's inconsistent with what you've been told in the information memo, et cetera? You know, those are all the kind of things that will help you decide whether something is important or not. But I do think for the young lawyer, the message has got to be, hey, when in doubt, raise it. Now, by the way, as I talk about sharing things, remember, again, be careful with whom you're sharing information. Some stuff may be very sensitive or legally dicey to share with the client, so it's much better, at least at the initial stages of these things, to, even if it's a business issue, not necessarily reach out to the client, but go up the food chain with the lawyers on the on your team and then see whether it's appropriate to reach out to the client, given the nature of the information in question.
Great. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.